So, I mean, the first thing to say is, I think fire is probably quite potently symbolic in all sort of all cultures and religions that I've come across, really, and no doubt always has been in a way, and even more so in the past when people were kind of more directly dependent on the heat from the fire and the light from the fire at night when they were living outdoors and before the times of electricity when we just press a button. So, you know, fire was obviously in those days quite important, both for cooking, for warmth, for warding off wild animals as well. I mean, most animals are frightened of fire, quite sensibly. So fire was very, very important also for the wild animals not to come near it. And there's the ancient Greek myth of, I don't know how to pronounce his name in English, Prometheus? Is it Prometheus? Prometheus, who stole the fire from the gods and then taught humanity how to harness fire's power. And many other cultures, interestingly, also have similar myths of fire having sort of been stolen from the gods and then being discovered by and stolen by heroic figures and then teaching humanity how to use it. So I don't quite know what to make of that, fire being stolen from the gods. But, I mean, one thing is it's something very special and very powerful and something that's not easily discovered. I don't think there are any animals who can make a fire. It's just human beings, isn't it? So it's something that only we, as living beings of this planet anyway, can use. And then we heard some weeks ago about the symbolism of the stupa, and we've still got this lovely little, you know, the geometric shapes here on the shrine. And so the symbol, the stupa is an ancient Buddhist burial mound. It started with a burial mound and then it became more and more complicated, symbolizing elements. So it's the red triangle or the red cone that symbolizes fire. And it's adapted from the ancient fire altars, which were used in, you know, many tribal shamanistic religions. And probably in some cultures at some times there were actual sacrifices made on the fire, you know, maybe even human sacrifices, definitely animal sacrifices. And what Buddhism did when they adapted the fire altar and incorporated it into the stupa was to encourage people to make more symbolic and metaphorical offerings rather than literal sort of sacrifices where you would burn living beings on the fire, sort of less concrete. And I think those fire sacrifices, I mean, there was kind of that symbolism that we've heard in the poem and that I've talked about at the beginning of the fire destroying but also transforming and making an offering. Fire goes upwards, so there was always something about fire going up, maybe up to the gods, that idea that you offer something up through the fire, but that it also renews something. So that's where the fire sacrifices came from. But as I said, the Buddha was encouraging people to be a bit less concrete about that. So what we do, I suppose, here in this tradition and other Buddhist traditions is have candles and incense, which still is fire, you know, but in a bit more of a subtle form. Although today we've got an actual quite wild fire burning here. And so those of you who've travelled to India or other, maybe, I don't know if it's happening in other countries, but in India, you can witness cremations, literally, and the burning ghats, often at rivers. And, you know, you, literally, people still today, you know, there's a huge pile of logs and the body is just sort of wrapped in a cloth and put at the top and burnt. And you can watch that. And there's something incredibly powerful about that, with that same, I suppose, symbolism of death and then through the fire as something being purified and offered up and the gross dead body kind of being given back to the elements, but also something gross turning into something more subtle. There is also that symbolism in cremations. And it is very powerful to actually watch that. So fire symbolizes purification as well, a lifting up of the gross material body to subtle levels through the transforming fire. And then some of you might not have seen these before, but I put a figure here on the shrine, which is not one of the peaceful Buddha figures. So there are a lot of peaceful Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, but also in Buddhism you get some wrathful figures, some actually very angry and fierce-looking figures, and often engulfed by a halo or by a circle of flames. So this is actually a female Buddha figure on the shrine called Vajrayogini. So you might, those of you who are sitting far away might want to have a look at her later on. But basically what the wrathful figures like Vajrayogini symbolise is that same kind of idea that the fire can burn away things that need to be burned away. So burn away, in Buddhism, the root poisons are greed, hatred and delusion. So the fire would be symbolising burning away greed, hatred and delusion in order to make room for an enlightened consciousness to arise. Vajrayogini is also trampling on a figure and she's holding a weapon and all sorts of other things. But today we're just concerned with sort of that halo of flames. Just that sometimes, I mean, what these wrathful figures symbolise is that sometimes you need something very energetic and fierce in order to move forward. And just peaceful calm isn't always enough. What else did I want to say about her? Yeah. So I'm just... the Buddha often used... Well, not often, but there were two particular occasions when the Buddha in his teachings used fire as a metaphor. And they're very, very powerful teachings. So one very famous one is called the Fire Sermon. And I just will read you a few lines of that because it's actually very powerful the way the Buddha is expressing himself here. He's talking to his monks, to his followers. So he says, bhikkhus. Bhikkhus means just monks. So he says, bhikkhus, all is burning. And what is the all that is burning? The eye is burning, forms are burning, eye consciousness is burning, the ear is burning, sounds are burning, the nose is burning, odours are burning, the tongue is burning, flavours are burning, the body is burning, tangibles are burning, the mind is burning, ideas are burning. Burning with what? Burning with a fire of lust, with a fire of hate, with a fire of delusion. I say it is burning with birth, aging and death, with sorrows, with lamentations, with pains, with griefs, with despairs. That's just an extract. So it's expressing that same thing of, he's saying in a way, the world is burning with these passions, with these forces of greed, hatred and delusion, and we need to do something fairly drastic in order to... get away from that, I suppose. So here the Buddha, he's metaphorically evoking the destructive power of fire, and he does that again in a later teaching. There is a parable in this mysterious text called the White Lotus Sutra, which is thought to have been the Buddha's last teaching in his lifetime, and the parable is called the Burning House. And it's Shakyamuni Buddha, he likens the whole mundane world to a burning house in which we roam about and we're oblivious to the dangers that we're in. We're just kind of playing like children and we're not realising that really we should hurry to get out of it as fast as we can. So again, it's a really, really powerful story of what he's saying there is that while we're still attached in a kind of clingy and sticky way to the mundane world, to things that don't last, it is just like being in a burning house, and really we should be running out, you know, we should be putting our attention, we should be putting our energy elsewhere. So very powerful teachings. So a burning house also, I've always kind of loved that story, I've always been fascinated by it in a way. So a burning house is a very potent and evocative symbol, and when I heard this story for the first time, I was reminded of my father. He hasn't told me very many stories about his past, but he told me one quite vivid childhood memory. He grew up in East Germany in the just during the Second World War, and he said he remembered he was 7 or 8, and they were bombing the city, and a bomb fell on the house next door to his. So they had to. He just remembers just being dragged out of his bed, and they had to run downstairs. And then he says he just remembered sitting on his little suitcase and he was watching his house burn to the ground. And he said he'd always remembered that. And he just remembers sitting there as a child and he just thought he couldn't believe that was happening. You know, he just couldn't compute it. And he just thought, just a minute ago, I was just lying in bed there, you know, and that was like his safe place, his home. And it's been like, I suppose, very symbolic for him the whole of his life, you know, that he thought, obviously, that's safe. That house, it lasts, that's my home. And then just all of a sudden, just like that, it can just burn away. So in a way, it's the same teaching as the Buddha was given, isn't it? When something like that happens to you, it makes you just realise that things that you think were safe and lasting just can be gone in a flash. So my own personal connection with fire is a bit more sort of on the positive side as a symbol of transformation and liberation in a way. It's through one of the visualization practices I do, and it does involve this figure of Vajrayogini here on the shrine. So in one part of that practice, you imagine, you sort of think of your small sort of ego literally burning up, and then sort of you rise up as this figure, you know, so you kind of try and get a sense of becoming much bigger, of just letting go of that little small self of yours and actually trying to imagine in a way that you're doing the meditation from the biggest possible perspective. And that's a very, very powerful thing, just imagining that your ego is definitely burning away. And then on a much smaller... And when you do that on a daily basis, sort of imagining that, it does have an effect. You know, it does have a bit of an effect, obviously. It doesn't make you enlightened on the spot, but it does have an effect of making you feel just a little bit more expansive. And then on a much smaller scale, a year ago, as part of my preparation for moving house, I was moving from one end of town to the other, I decided to burn all of my handwritten journals. So for years I've been carrying about like many boxes of handwritten journals. And I just thought, I am not going to carry them to another place that I'm going to live in. So I'm just going to ritually burn them. So I was living in a community at the time in Bodhidhara, but remember this, it was about a year ago actually, wasn't it? We made this big bonfire in the garden of our community where it was mainly for me to burn the journals, but then other people in the house also thought, oh, well, I've got some things that I want to get rid of. So people were adding things to the pile, and we had this absolutely enormous bonfire. And it felt so, I mean, it was for hours, it was burning for hours. We were chanting some mantras, and it felt very, very liberating. And just sitting around the fire, it's quite hypnotic as well to look at the fire. And I felt just so free after doing that, you know, thinking, oh, I don't have these things. You know, I was carrying them around for no particular reason. Very liberating. But then what was also interesting was, I don't know if it was the next day or a couple of days later, I literally had this kind of... backlash or something. I'm calling it a backlash. I woke up and my back had gone. You know, I literally thought there was something terrible had happened to my back, and I had to go to the osteopath. You know, I actually ended up going to my very trusted massage therapist, saying, "Don't know what's happened to my back. I can hardly move. You know, can you do something?" And he gave me this very skillful massage and said that he thought he'd released some knots in my back, and you know, it felt much better. And he said, okay, you know, he said, do you feel better? And I said, yeah, it does feel better. It doesn't feel quite as drastic as it did. And I said, what was it? You know, was it a trapped muscle or a nerve or something? He looked at me and he said, no. He said, many old emotions all knotted up together or something like that. He's Korean, so his English is not very fluent, but he expresses himself very poetically. So I thought, that makes so much sense. It was almost like that fire, you know, because it was all my memories, I suppose, everything I'd written, burning away. And it was so fast, it was almost like my psyche had to catch up with that or something, you know. And then afterwards, after a few days, I was perfectly fine. So I thought that was very interesting in terms of stuck energy being released, but it kind of takes its time. And fire is something that's very fast and sometimes a bit too fast. And then finally, just connecting in connection with my quite unsettling fire experience that I've just been talking about, I just wanted to come back to the six element practice that Paramananda introduced us to a few weeks ago. So in the first half of the class today, I we kind of practiced a version of it, just, you know, I just stuck to the four elements and just connecting the elements inside the body and outside the body, which is quite a mild version of the practice, and Paramananda also did quite a mild version of the practice. But even so, I think it can be quite powerful. So I just wanted to say, if any of you have had kind of quite disturbing feelings come up, or disturbing thoughts, or if, you know, if you experiment with this at home and you're feeling, you know, it's feeling a little bit scary, then do talk to one of the teachers here, you know, while we're doing sort of this theme of the elements, because I think it does need to be taken seriously, that there is, it is real, you know, the elements in our body are the same as the elements outside our body. It does make you think of things like death and dying, and it can be quite disturbing, you know, depending on where you are emotionally. So just to say that. It sort of shakes up our usual experience of ourselves as solid and separate. And that's a good thing, because we're not solid and separate, and it can be very liberating. But it also is incredibly unsettling and quite frightening. You know, it can be quite frightening. And it's important to do it in a way that's manageable and you can integrate it. Otherwise, it can throw you a little bit. So I just wanted to say that at the end.